Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Justin.
What's up, everybody? I'm Pete.
Oh, not going to say
no
The
welcome.
Stack?
No welcome to The Stack.
Yeah, you're unwelcome. You are unwelcome in Pete's opinion, but I'm kidding.
Pete's opinion.
Pete's opinion.
Pete's opinion.
Pete's opinion.
Pete's opinion.
I promised before we got on here we would get through this podcast real quickly and efficiently. I don't think that's going to happen.
I'm sorry, Alex. I don't get through anything. I luxuriate because this is fun, and there's a lot of give due diligence and respect to every single one.
All right. Well, why don't we kick it off then, speaking of respect, with our Pride Block.
Pride Block!
Pride. Do you have, by the way, before we get in and talk about these books, whenever you hear Pride Month's coming up, by the way, it's celebrating people who are LGBTQ plus. That's awesome. It kicks off on June 1st. Comic books are kicking it off a little bit early. Pete's doing some ridiculous emojis here on the Zoom chat. Please stop, Pete.
Just supporting out here. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
No, you are a real ally. My question for you is, whenever anybody says Pride Month in your head, do you repeat Pride the way that Megatron says Prime in the first Transformers movie?
Wow. I think that's more of a likely Pete thing to do.
Yeah, but, because I do it. Whenever anybody says, Pride. Like, happy Pride, I go, Pride, in my head.
Wow. Huh. Weird.
I just wanted to share here at the top.
That's your commitment to Pride?
Yeah, that's me being an ally.
What an ally.
Wow.
Optimus Prime.
It's Optimus Prime.
Yes,
it's
and Optimus he's a real Prime. Truck daddy, and he's the ultimate ally.
Oh, boy.
He is a real truck daddy.
Well, anyway, we've got three titles to talk about that are coming out this week, so I'm going to read them off here. X-Men The Wedding Special, number one from Marvel, written by Kieran Gillen, T.D. Howard, Tate Bromble, Yoon-Ha Lee, and Wyatt Kennedy. Art by Rachel Stott, Philip Seavey, Emilia Pulu, Stephen Byrd, and Jed St. Ong. Then there's DC Pride 2024 from DC Comics, written by Al Ewing, Ngozi Okazu, Gretchen Felker Martin, Jamila Rouser, Jared Williams, Nicole Maines, Clavin Kasukul, Melissa Marr, I ran out of breath there, Phil Jimenez, art by Stephen Byrd, Ngozi Okazu, Claire Rowe, O'Neill Jones, DJ Kirkland, Jordan Gibson, Len Gogu, Jed St. Ong, and Julia Machione, and Star Trek Celebrations from IDW, written by Steve Orlando, Vita Ayala, Mags Visaggio, Stephanie Williams, and Hada Rose May, art by Lauren Knight, Liana Kangas, Tench, Danny Mignon, and Jack Lawrence. Now, before we get into the specific books, and
I think nice it's worth, job. Nice great job.
It was
nice
all right.
Job.
It was all right. I'll give myself
I mean, you murdered
like
a couple of them, but it was
for
still
sure.
Great.
I'll give myself like a B minus there. Okay. This,
ooh, nice.
I thought was really interesting.
Are you going to be grading yourself all night?
Or? Absolutely. Every performance, book by book. Again, we're going to get through this really quickly. I'm just going to grade myself on every performance, and that won't slow things down.
What a performance!
Performance. I like that you, a monologue audition for community theater
I'm
role?
Honestly not sure what we're doing anymore. Before we get into the books individually, I thought it was really interesting reading these in a row, just because these are three oversized Pride specials, some a little more oversized than the other, but they hit it in vastly different ways. X-Men The Wedding Special is very story-based. It's focusing mostly, but not entirely, on the LGBTQ plus members of the X-Men, as well as some extensions into the Marvel Universe, as Mystique and Destiny get married. So we're getting to see that happen and stories that run off of that as we jump back and forward in time. DC Pride 2024 the biggest of these issues, lengthwise, very similar to the previous lauded, critically acclaimed issues that they've done in the past, is very much focused on like the broad swath of the DC universe, but also what it means to them to be part of this community, to have pride, etc. Like, it's zoned in on that very squarely. And then Star Trek Celebrations, for the most part, goes in the opposite direction. Like, there's a little bit of it, but it's mostly who are the LGBTQ plus characters in the Star Trek universe, in the various shows and movies, etc., and how can we tell stories about them? So,
and some of those stories, I guess we'll talk about in a second, are, like you're saying, like, super wonky about their Star Trek things they're doing.
But like, I thought this was very interesting. Like, I thought it was very interesting to see these three wildly different approaches to this. I do think, and this is not dismissively, the DC Pride issue is kind of what you expect from this sort of thing. Like, characters being like, what does it mean to be bisexual? What does it mean to be gay, pan, etc.? Like, what does that mean for me as a character? They're really interesting discussions. I really love these characters. I love what they do here. It's very much a Pride issue versus the other two, which are very much these more story-based issues. So I think it's just different approaches, and there's space for all of these different approaches. And I don't know, I appreciated reading all of them.
Yeah, they were all great for different reasons, like you're saying. I mean, I don't know if we want to kind of dive into which one first, but...
Why don't we talk about them one by one? I just kind of wanted to talk about the broad swath because I just was really struck by that progression as I was reading through. Yeah. But why don't we talk about the X-Men, the wedding special first? That's a big one that not only has the wedding of Mystique and Destiny and other things, it's this weird place where we're wrapping up Krakoa, and it kind of exists in that, but kind of not. And it's also teasing some potentially big stuff that's coming. So, wild issue.
It is. But I like the way that it plays fast and loose with the continuity, because it's not about that. It's just existing at that time. It's more about the actual celebration. And I thought the Mystique Destiny stuff, I thought was really, it was my favorite part of it. Like, feel like they've done a great job of just really, like, lifting up this story and making it just a nice part of what's been going on lately. The Nightcrawler, the revelation that they are the parents of Nightcrawler, I thought was really great a couple months ago, and we get to see a little bit more of that here. And they're just, their romance here is just really well done, and it the way, and it is really paid off, I think, at the end. There's an interview with Chris Claremont in the back talking about how important their story was and the fact that he had to sort of work around the Comics Code Authority back in the day, but they were always intended to be a couple, I thought was super interesting and a great sort of corollary to the current continuity action and the wedding itself.
Yeah, just to kind of jump in on what Justin was saying there, I really loved, you know, I love a love story that really showcases how two people are connecting and how they are work together, how they're give and take. And, you know, you see a lot of like, oh, man, is this person going to straighten out, or now that they're married, are they going to be different or whatever? I really love the Mystique kind of like ending where they're, you know, Mystique, and spoilers for the issue here. Mystique has a stand-in bot, and because she's on this adventure, and instead of, you know, her partner being like, what the fuck, she kicks over the bot and is like, yeah. And then when Mystique jumps through the window, it's on, you know, like nothing happened. And I think that that is so great, because it shows this person knows who Mystique is and doesn't want Mystique to be not Mystique. You know what I mean? So I just thought it was just such a cool way to kind of showcase two characters, you know, knowing who they are and being together. So, these are all very moving overall and very powerful, and great to get different stories out in the world for sure.
It helps when one of them can see everything that happens all the time.
Oh, sure, fine, yeah, but still, you know,
my favorite running joke throughout the issue is multiple people being like, why are we supporting this wedding? We hate these people. They have been villains.
Yeah, we like especially Destiny, they were like, we brought back every mutant we could think of on Krakoa, and Destiny was like the last one.
I thought that was fantastic. Just like a riff on the whole wedding issue idea. Anole, I think it was Anole, was the character who was printing out t-shirts, pictures of Mystique that say bisexual menace on it. Very funny joke as well. And yeah, also just that it's all leading up, spoiler here, but leading up to a be gay, do crimes joke was very funny as well.
Yeah.
I did want to ask, and by the way, I want to mention with all of these spoilers, I got knocked at a comment on iTunes for giving
me you spoilers. Oh,
yes, you did.
Podcast. First of all, I don't care. Second of all, let's talk about a spoiler. There is a present from Mr. Sinister that they get, which is a tube with a person in it. And I was sure we were going to find out who that was by the end.
Me too.
We don't. Who is it? What's going on there?
I don't know. That was so weird. Especially when I was like, is that Silver Surfer's board? Like, is what it looked like? Clearly not. But I was like, what a weird thing to not reveal. And when will they reveal that? I don't know. I got to think it has to be revealed in the X-Men issue that comes out, which is basically buttoning up this whole event. If they don't reveal it then it's like lost to time, I feel like. But that was weird. I will say my favorite little bit was the in the Rogue Gambit story. The gift that Rogue gives Destiny, I thought was so cool, so smart. Yeah. That was a nice little... I'm glad that one was last. It felt like the nicest way to close it up.
And just a shout out to of the other stories, as a fan of Excalibur, I think it was T.D. Howard's story with Betsy Braddock and Rachel Sutter is seeing Technic and Great Cat, Gatecrasher, all those crazy characters.
All those Captain Britons, I was like, all right, let's get the goose Captain Britain here. Gotta do that. Sure.
No, but it paid off very nicely. Like, it was clearly setting up these Captain Britons just so they could defeat TechNet. I thought that was a very fun story. And also seeing Logan palling around with some kids in a shout-out to the Wolverine in the X-Men era, I thought was very nice as well, particularly given stuff we'll be talking about later on in the stack. Why don't we move on and talk about DC Pride, though? Justin, you mentioned this on the live show, but great stories throughout. They're all, unfortunately, completely overshadowed by Philia Menace's story at the end, which is phenomenal.
Like, truly, it's maybe the best short story I've read in comics this year. Like, it is so good. It's it's Phil Jimenez talking about how Wonder Woman was so important to him when he was a kid, and then you really follow him as he then writes on it, and the passion he feels when he talks about how he got to create new Themyscira. I'm saying that wrong, but then it gets destroyed in continuity. And it's so upsetting. You feel his feelings. And I'm like, hey, man, don't take it personally. Shit gets wrecked constantly. That's the whole thing. It was just it's such a beautiful story. It's beautifully. The art is so nice. And he just writes it. The art is by Giulio Macchioni. And it's the best story of the stack for me. And it is fantastic. Definitely worth picking up.
Yeah, and you know, the other stories, I mean, we get two Ivy stories in here, which are really great, and the Jack Snyder Aquaman is also enjoyable. The Stealing Time one with Constantine is, and the art on everything is just, it's great for a lot of different reasons, but really impressive collection they put together here.
I'll shout out the Starman story as well at the beginning. Yes. Is very good, too.
Right up. And just on that real quick, sorry, Alex, it connects directly to the Starman series. One of just a fantastic issue where the Blue Starman fights in a disco. It's a great issue. They fight in sort of the mindscape, and it picks up on that stuff directly here for this story, which I thought was really cool.
And I will mention, maybe I'm getting this wrong, but I don't think I am. Last year's Pride issue, Philia Menace wrote the foreword, and I very distinctly remember being like, this is most wonderful, like, tear in my eye forward I've read in a very long time. So the fact that, like, you got the front matter last year and crushed it, and got the back matter this year and crushed it, like, I don't know what he's going to do to top it next year, but he wins Pride, I guess.
Wow.
It's a contest, right?
It's a contest, yeah.
Nope, shouldn't be.
I also want to say I thought the Dreamer story was excellent. I feel Dreamer's having like a weird renaissance of just
Nicole Maines, man, is just like crushing it with all of these Dreamer stories. The Suicide Squad Dream Team series is great as well. So like she's knocking this character out of the park.
I also want to say I really love the interstitials. The little art panels that focus on a color and have different characters. I thought those were just really, really beautifully done and sort of taking the rainbow of it all and using it in an interesting way. That was very cool. And I've been rereading The Ray, the original. The first trade of that series. So it was great to see The Ray in here. Another character who I think is great.
And let's talk about Star Trek Celebration. So we're getting a lot of stuff. The John Cho version of Sulu to kick things off. He was very casually and offhandedly revealed to be in a longstanding gay relationship in, I believe, Star Trek Beyond, where he was like, this is my husband. Anyway, moving on, which I was like, what is happening here? But you get him, you get Nurse Chapel. Sort of in like a very different situation than in Star Trek Strange New Worlds, which was surprising. Get a little bit of Lower Decks, which I think was the story that, as a fan of all of these series, made the most sense to me. Like, that was one that was like, oh, this is extending out of things that have happened in Star Trek Lower Decks. But I will say, even though these were mostly stories that were tangential to their sexualities, I think there's something to be said for doing something like that in terms of, yes, these are LGBTQ plus people who are just existing. Like, that is the thing that they're doing. And particularly side by side with these other two issues we've talked about, I appreciate that approach as well.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, and like this exposed the fact that I haven't been keeping up on my Star Trek television because I was like, what is a lot of this? But I will say, reading the Innovation Interruption, the Stephanie Williams one that focuses on, is her name Jet? Reno. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, that's the Tig Notaro character, isn't it? And it definitely was.
That's the one that's the most far afield because it's like, Tig Notaro, undefined sexuality on the show, and Anthony Rapp, who plays Stamets, who is in one of the great romances of Star Trek with his husband, played by Wilson Cruz. But it's just the two of them doing stuff together, which they do on the show anyway, and it has literally nothing to do with pride or sexuality. And that's the one where it like really snapped in for me, where I was like, oh, they're just letting them exist. That's all.
And the story before that is the Facemaker story, which that's the Chapel story, right? I was like, this is so like deep, like not, I guess not main continuity, but like in world continuity that I was super interested in all of that. But I was like, I can't believe this big idea story is a short in this Celebrations issue. And I was like, I could see a series about this. This feels like this could be an episode in any of the TV shows.
Well, the other thing that's kind of big about it, and I might be totally wrong because I may not be remembering my Strange New Worlds, but there's been a lot of intimations that Nurse Chapel is sexually fluid or something like that. She's had this big romance with Spock that's happened over the course of the first two seasons. But I don't think we've ever seen a girlfriend or anything like that. So that's another huge thing this story is doing for the first time, which is kind of wild that it's like, yeah, we're just throwing this into our Pride special at the end.
Yeah. Well,
but there you go. Anyway, good stuff. Check out great all stuff. Three issues. Let's close down our Pride block for now. Pride is over for the month, I believe. And
I don't actually think so. We're just kicking it off. We're kicking it off early, in fact.
Oh, there you go. Ultimate Spider-Man, number 5, the ultimate queer ally from Marvel, written by Jonathan Hickman, art by David Messina. In this issue, we are jumping back in time and showing what happened to Harry Osborn after the day that his parents blew up and following it to the present day and catching us up to the present, finding out how he became the new Goblin. It was a big mythology issue. What'd you guys think about this one?
Man, it's a rough phone call there that Harry has with his dad, man. That was kind of it was heartbreaking. But yeah, unbelievable art, enjoying the twists and turns, and the Kingpin stuff was really cool. But yeah, that was a tough phone call to get through.
Well, and you know, I think if Uncle Ben had died in an era of cell phones, he might have been on the phone with Pete. I think that's we're getting here, is that he has
He'd probably be WhatsApping with him.
Yeah. Yeah, Uncle Ben is definitely sort of a Snapchat guy.
Yeah, I think he's... Yeah, he would be more into the Budweiser, what's up, you know what I mean? I think that's what Uncle Ben would be like on the phone.
Nice. We went in a different way than you, Pete. We went very slightly younger, and you went with the dustiest thing you could uncover.
That's right.
That's great.
Spider-Man fights Frogman sometimes, like the Budweiser frogs that say Budweiser, right, Pete?
The idea of Uncle Ben being like Peter if Uncle Ben's like, "What's up?" with great power comes great responsibility. I think that's what you were going for, Pete.
Yep.
It's interesting. This series, I feel like, has been such an easy breezy new continuity. Let's hang out with Peter Parker. And this issue is the opposite of that, in that it barely features Peter Parker and is a hasty drive through Harry's Green Goblin story that is continuity heavy and sort of like, you were paying attention to all of this stuff, right? When every issue about Peter Parker has been sort of a little bit agnostic from that. So I was surprised with that, but I did enjoy this. And I think this is such a fun corner of the Marvel Universe right now.
I do want to have a better sense of where we're going emotionally with this. You know, this is something that I talked about with the first issue a little bit as well. But this issue, there's a great conversation in a bar. We finally catch up to, I want to say, 2 issues ago when they were on the rooftop and they were like, let's go get a drink. We get to see that drink. And there's this conversation where Peter's like, yeah, Tony Stark showed up to me. It was like, you were supposed to be a hero. And I knew in my gut that's what I needed to do. Meanwhile, Harry explains, I had to work at this really hard and figured everything out. And I'm really curious to see where we're going to net out with that conversation. Because I think my feeling, just from knowing comic books, is Harry is going to turn out to be a villain at some point. He's going to go wrong. He's going to take things too far. But
Green Goblins are good now, Alex, and they don't ever turn
back. Well, but here's my question. It's like, from my perspective as a human being who lives in the world, Peter Parker was just handed his destiny on a silver plate. It's like, cool, I'm Spider-Man now. I fight. Yay. And that's it. That is cheap and easy and sends you on the path of being a villain versus what Harry is doing, which is working hard and working his mind around it, figuring out things and trying to do the right thing for the world. So, well, I don't know. I'm just interested to see what happens. That's all.
And that's why I know I was joking before, but that it is an Uncle Ben situation that Harry goes through. Harry is the more Spider-Man here. Mm-hmm. So, like, to your point, like, maybe that is what's happening. That Peter is sort of handed the mantle, like it was, like Norman handed it to Harry, Green Goblin. And maybe that's what we're going toward.
Yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting. Why don't we move on and talk about Batman Dark Age, number 3 from DC Comics, written by Mark Russell, art by Mike Allred. In this issue, we're continuing to go through the back in time. Batman, he's finally in action in Gotham City, mixing it up with Superman and other characters that we know and love in this new continuity. I love the series. Mark Russell does great cultural commentary here. Mike Allred's art is reliably fantastic as always. Good stuff.
Yeah, I just amazeballs art. I mean, just brings a fun and a lightness to the storytelling, but also, it's kind of sad to see old Bruce trying to remember his life. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
It's interesting, the him not remembering part, because I don't know what point that serves yet.
The point is he's old, and if you get old, sometimes you have a hard time remembering things.
Thank you for saying if, because I don't plan on it. But okay, I did think that there's some fun. Mark Russell always sneaks in some great jokes. There's a point where Batman's going to the Hall of Justice and Superman's like, "This is Wonder Woman," and she says, "Please call me Wonder." Which I was like, "Oh, what a funny little
that's a weird,
standalone weird thing."
Yeah,
and it's never referenced.
Wonder Woman is too formal. Just call me Wonder.
Yeah, it's great.
This is great stuff. I also love Pariah in the boardroom where they're like, "What do you think we should do business wise?" And Pariah's like, "The end is the beginning," and the which I know is not specifically meant to be funny, but it is funny at the same time.
Well, it definitely that Mark Russell is going to Mark Russell, and I think his commentary is always going to be there. And it's great. Yeah, you don't realize just how little time you have left. And even if you did, I'm not sure it would matter. You're ticks, and you will continue to live as ticks because that's all you know. And they're like, "All right, let's move on."
next order of business.
And but on top of all this sort of fun we're talking about, this is a great. There's great action in this. There's great use of, like, Batman shows up and is like, "This Hall of Justice is lame." Funny take. But then Green Arrow comes in and is like, "This is just what I needed," which is a little more real. And then the last page, I won't spoil what it is, but there's just a great moment, a great little bit of comic book storytelling that uses some Batman mythology in a really smart, interesting way, set up at the beginning and paid off at the end in a way where it's like, I hope you're paying attention because I'm not going to tell you this, but if you are paying attention, this is really cool.
All right, we got a couple of big issues in a row.
So real quick, because I don't spoil stuff. That's what Alex does.
Please leave comments on iTunes letting us know how great Justin is at not spoiling stuff.
I would love, you know what? It's great the takedown, but let's get some compliments in there.
Yeah, let's get lift people up. Don't just knock them down. Once Upon a Time at the End of the World, number 15 from Boom Studios, written by Jason Aaron, illustrated by Nick Dragotta, Alexandra Tefedgi, and Layla Del Duca. This is the final issue of this series Mezco and I really should know these characters' names by this point.
Is he?
Masio, you're talking about?
Yeah, Masio and Mezzi, is that?
Mezzi,
Mezzi,
they both have Ed names. That's what's messing me up. Anyway, we get to see them in multiple timelines as they fight to save the world. And
oh, man.
Potentially their relationship as well. I already know what Pete's problem with this book was.
Really?
Yes, I do. I'm very curious to hear from you because I read this and I was like, oh, God, I know what Pete is going to say here. But I will say I thought this was a phenomenal series from front to back, completely stuck the landing here, and was just a beautiful use of the apocalypse as metaphor for relationships, as we have talked about all along with this book. I was completely impressed by it. And it is very rare that you see multiple artists on a book and works.
Exactly.
It worked 100% here. This is a classic that if you missed, you should pick up. Go back, read the trades. People will be talking about this, I think, for years to come.
I agree. I think this is an epic love story. I hate to see it end. Very touching and messed up. But I think what I liked about it is it kind of told you from the beginning, this is a kind of a messy, realistic kind of love story. And it was interesting. I mean, the ending haunts me a little bit. You know what I mean?
That's what Alex was saying, I think.
Yeah.
And it would bother you.
Yeah. You know, because you want to know why. You know what I mean? And it's, you know, as Justin says, I like getting in characters' heads. We were kind of in his head for that moment, but I wanted more. You know what I mean? Because it's, I don't know. People drift apart. That makes sense. But I just, the fact that they weren't, you know, because at the end, they had a nice moment and you kind of wished for more. But I like the realism of it. So,
I've already established that I'm the spoiler guy here, but I'm going to spoil the end of this book. So, if you are that listener who gave us one star on iTunes, turn away here. So, at the end of the issue, our two characters have worked on saving the world. They've worked on stopping the destruction that's about to be caused by the machine they created. Mezco's arms have been blasted off, so Mezzi needs to be... Mazi?
Masio and Mezzi.
Masio
because
and Mezzi.
Can't say... Yeah, we have to say them different enough where we know the difference.
So Masio's arms have been blasted off. Mezzi is his arm. She doesn't know machines the way that Donatello does or he does. And so they end up stopping this machine from exploding, and it is slowly repairing the world. Like, not completely all at once, but it is slowly repairing it. And we're finally left with them in the sense of calm. Once again, Masio is in a tower by himself, the place we found him at the beginning of the series, and Mezzi is down on the ground, basically farming. They're eating the same fruit, and they're both thinking of each other, but they're on the opposite sides of the chasm that was created by the machine that they created, that is now tentatively, tantalizingly connected by several vines. Yes, by a bridge. So the implication there is they broke apart. They had a moment where they were brought back together, but the things that broke them apart are still there. The problems are still there, but there is a connection between them. Will they be able to cross it? We don't know, but that's where we leave them at the end.
And I just think it's so rare for a comic or any piece of anything to come out that has where the metaphor and the storytelling are on the same level of mastery. Like, this is, I think this is a masterpiece. When this comes out in a trade, this is going on my shelf. I want to hand this to anybody who's struggling in their relationship or just thinking about how they feel about another person, because this is like, it's such an inspiring story. It covers both love and what happens when love falls apart with equal sort of value. It's an understanding of both in a way that you just don't get an understanding of these two sides of a relationship in any other story that I've ever encountered, as we do in this book. And like you're saying, Alex, it's like, yes, there's a tenuous connection. They'll always have a connection. They saved the world because they became one, essentially. Mezzi becomes Masio's hands. He has the knowledge. She has the ability to do it. And then they can never be that, because once you're one, it's hard, and that breaks apart. It just doesn't fit in the same way. And there's just great looks. They look at each other still fondly. Mezzi seems like she's sort of giving him side eye. Masio's looking through binoculars. So like all the ideas are there. And back on the art, like the art itself, it's reflective of the different ages. The present day is a little like, you know, it's a little rougher around the edges, a little sketchier. It's Nick Dragota. And then the stuff that's in flashback is a little more like cartoony, a little more like bright. It's, well, those early parts in a relationship. It's one of the best books that in the last few years. It's such a fave to me.
It is glorious.
Yes. All right. Well, I'm glad you liked it, Pete. I was a little worried because they don't end up together at the end.
He says tomorrow. He says maybe he's going to go over there tomorrow. So we don't know. Tomorrow he could go over there and they could be together. So fuck you.
I actually just texted Jason Aaron and he says he dies the next day.
No, don't. Stop trying to ruin this for me. I like it.
Nice. Why don't we move on to another almost ending? There's going to be another issue after this, but Rise of the Powers of X, number 5 from Marvel, written by Kieran Gillen, art by Luciano Vecchio. This is the final official-ish issue of the Krakoa era. We're going to get one more oversized thing, X-Men number 35, which is legacy numbered as 700. That is
huge
going to
issue.
Wrap things up, kick things into the next era of X-Men. But here, we're getting the finale of all the Kieran Gillen side of stuff, which is all the wild sci-fi stuff, which means Phoenix versus Enigma, the giant floating Dominion head of Nathaniel Essex. We get Professor X versus Moira X through multiple timelines in a mindscape, and lots of other things go down as well. In my mind, I mean, we'll see what happens in X-Men 35, but this is the end of the story essentially the Jonathan Hickman kicked off in House of X and Powers of X. Justin, why don't we go to you first?
Nice.
For no particular
good,
reason.
Good choice. I like this. I like that the editorial was like, you know what? Why don't we wrap up all the stuff that most people don't understand in a separate book, and then we'll wrap up the regular stuff in another book. It's like dropping a science textbook on the desk and then on top of it dropping a piece of toast and being like, you want to know how the toast is made? Read that book. And people are like, I'd just rather eat the toast, sir. Thank you so much. Because this gets into so much like wonky, wild stuff, and it's fantastic. It's the Dominion stuff. The way that Phoenix defeats Dominion is like wild. I think the biggest takeaway is that Professor X isn't a villain. He wasn't a monster this whole time. He was moving the pieces the only way he saw fit, and he's not a maniac after all. What a great lesson for all of us.
that is basically like, I'm going to finish this up by sticking my finger right up this bear's butthole. Over to you, Pete.
Over to you, bear. How's your butthole, bear? Speak on it.
I just think that, first off, cool cover. All right.
Totally.
Then we kind of get the Phoenix Force talking about the white hot room, which, okay. I like the homage to the kind of old school Jean Grey Phoenix Force outfit. So that was a fun kind of walk down memory lane with that. And then her kind of like badass moment where she's all the X-Men was just badass. And then she uses the Wolverine claws. I'm having fun there. And then it seems like Charles turns himself into the cops. Great art. I didn't get a lot of this stuff, but not a bad ish.
So I really like this a lot. The only criticism that I really have is that it was surprisingly small for the big action that stuff is going on. And that's just because it was Jean Grey versus Nathaniel Essex, Moira versus Professor X. The two trains are tied together. We do get this moment where Jean Grey is like, I am the X-Men. You will never stop us, and becomes every X-Man. But at the same time, it's still Jean Grey. So it feels like this very intimate thing for what should be a big finale. But in true Kieran Gillen fashion, I was completely surprised by how they wrapped this up, but thought it worked. Like, we've talked about, how do they get out of this era? How do they get out of the hole? Moira has resurrection powers, and without spoiling it to that listener who criticized me online, I think they came up with a really elegant solution at the end of the day that I was very impressed by. So I think that worked, and I think how they got out of the Dominion thing really worked very nicely as well, while leaving it up potentially for any of these storylines to pop up in future issues way down the road, if anybody wants to pick them up in classic comic book fashion. But good stuff. Please help. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I think the White Hot Room will now endure, I think, as a Krakoa fragment. Mm-hmm. That anyone can call on and bring back. There's it's sort of complicated flowchart at the end.
Yeah.
The legend talks about how the White Hot Room, with the in transformation inherent to the creation of the Phoenix, it is settling into its new form. It's presently inaccessible to all known methods. Like, we're not going to touch this for a little bit. But what this means for Mysterium that was mined from there is still being explored. It's like, yeah, we don't want to talk about Mysterium either, the made-up metal that's more cool than adamantium.
Yeah, all of that stuff feels like they are not going to touch it with the 10-foot pole in any of the new X-Men things, because they want to simplify things as much as possible and be like, X-Men, hated and feared, here we go, the end, which is fine. Like, I'm fine with taking a break and going in another direction.
Yeah, give us a little reset, man.
But at the same time, this strikes me as Kieran Gillen be like, hey, man, there's 200,000 mutants stuck in the White Hot Room in their own Krakoa building a new society. If you ever want to do a series about that, or I ever want to do a series about that, That's here for somebody to play with. And I like that.
And I agreed. And it's interesting. There's one very clear interpretation that then this X-Men 35 issue, X-Men 700, is the full reset. We don't ever have to look back and do any sort of reconciling of Krakoa. But I would be surprised if that happened. But that's what I'm saying. Like, I'd be surprised if the way this issue ends that you didn't spoil, Alex, is like, you don't have to, we don't have to ever say another thing about this. Mm-hmm. But they must, I feel
they
like.
They will, yes.
In this final issue.
Yeah, I think they're going to, like, wrap up all of the plot lines. They're going to firmly establish that Jean Grey, Cyclops, and Wolverine were a throuple so that Tom Brevoort can get off his high horse and his newsletter.
We get a shot. We get a shot of it.
We do get a shot. Also, I'll mention, in the wedding issue, sorry, this is an
right, are you talking about the...
Oh, that's where we got the shot, is the wedding issue. Bed?
Yeah, Wolverine, Jean Grey is like hanging on him.
Yeah, her arms are around him.
Right. And Tom Brevoort has been on one. This is
I did want to bring it up because, you know, that's not what this
but
is
like,
about.
Okay, he has not actually been on one. He's been fine. He's a reasonable guy. But, like, people have been on him about the fact that he's like, yeah, canonically, I don't think they've officially ever said they're a throuple. And I was like, here's evidence number one. Here's evidence number two. And yeah. To be fair to him, none of this stuff is them being like, hello, we are a throuple. It's all circumstantial evidence. But at the same time, it's enough circumstantial evidence that we all know they were the throuple on the moon. And then in the wedding special, we get a shot of Jean hanging on Logan in a very familiar way. And I'm like, come on, Tom. Tommy.
Yeah.
Tommy.
Come on, Tommy. Tommy. Let the throuple happen. Let's talk about the throuple. Maybe that's what the next issue is about. X-Men 35.
Yeah. Throuple just issue. Like, it's a porto, basically. The Flash, number 9 from DC Comics, written by Simon Spurrier, art by Ramon Perez. Pete, you were nodding very heavily. You're like, I love that. I love that, Alex.
I love that.
I love it.
Nope.
Bon Appetit. Art,
bon Appetit, says Pete. Art by Ramon Perez and Vasco Georgiev. Wild, big stuff happening in this issue as we get multiple Flashes being attacked. And the Flash family starts to fight back at the villains that have been attacking them. But you also get a reveal of who Pilgrim really is. You could probably have figured it out, but I thought the reveal was great anyway.
Agreed.
This issue is awesome because the first 8 issues felt like purposefully reading somebody's mad diaries. And in this issue, we get multiple characters being like, hold up. We specifically the hold wives up. Of the Flash
wait
being
a
like,
minute.
What are you guys doing? We know what's going on here. Let's stop doing this. Let's fight back about this. And this is a thrilling issue to read if you're a Flash fan or otherwise, just because they start pushing it back against all this insanity that has happened thus far.
I've loved this crossover or this arc so much. I feel like it's the most interesting speedster stuff because it's emphasizing their flaws rather than just the bright way they finish everything. And I thought, is it Linda has the best sort of take on it? She's like, don't worry, I'm not scared of you. If you're here to hurt us, you would have done it by now. If you're being mind controlled, I'd be dead now. So hand me the kid and let's dispense with all this shit and get to the... I was like, it's just really... Cy Spurrier is just so smart about his take here. And I've never said that there's a David Lynchian comic, but this comic feels like Twin Peaks in a way. I feel like a lot of people make David Lynch and Twin Peaks comparisons to television movies all the time. But this comic is doing it, and that's hard. And I don't know if that's the intention, but it really is hitting that sweet spot in a great way.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a drippy, tripped out nightmare art style, which is kind of fun. The Flash running with the knife was just like so scary to me. I was like,
something you're not supposed to do.
Yeah, I was like, you can't run with scissors. Don't have a speedster running with a knife. Like, what are you doing? It was just nerve wracking to see that. But the interesting white frisbee head guy, Wade.
That's what his name is.
That was kind of cool. But I'm not sure what's happening at all.
I really like this quite a bit, but why don't we move on and talk about William of Newbury, number one from Dark Horse Comics, written and drawn by Michael Avon Oeming. This is, I'd say, back in the day, except everybody is animals back in the day in this anthropomorphic book, as our titular character investigates demons and ghosts and weird mysteries while the church disapproves. He brings on an apprentice, kind of, who is not Winnie the Pooh, but is called Witty and is a mouse and kind of looks like Winnie the Pooh.
He's a nasty mouse.
He's a mouse, dude. He's a not nasty Winnie mouse. The Pooh.
Yeah,
he's a mouse.
Anyway.
Who's a bear?
Great, as always, Michael Avon Oeming art throughout here. I mean, that is unimpeachable, but I was surprised at how funny and fun this is, given the medieval style setting and the dark supernatural stuff. William is a great protagonist in this book.
Didn't have jokes back in medieval times?
I think so. They were mostly dying of the Black Plague, I believe.
There was jesters and stuff. All right.
You think jesters were like funny? The stand-ups? They were doing like...
Yeah, they were. They were stand-ups of,
prithee, I stab myself for you, my king.
He's like, what's the deal with the moats? Everybody's got a moat. I mean, what's the deal? Listen.
Welcome to the roast of Prince Tom Brady. All right, tonight on the dais we have Sir Lancelot.
This is fun. It's, the raccoon is the first Ghostbuster of our time. So I just think it's a great idea.
Raccoons are actually nature's Ghostbusters.
That's right. Yes. It's exactly. Yeah. And I like the first kind of encounter that we deal with here. I think it's a really fun premise. Great idea. Well executed. I mean, worth it for the art of loan. Love the team that William is slowly building here. And he's, like you said, a great main character. And yeah, the douchebag people at the church, I love his attitude about it. So I'm all in on this.
Trash is just the ghosts of the food we eat. And that's why raccoons are busting trash all the time.
Busting makes you feel good.
That's right. Pete, I knew you were going to love this because it's early Hellboy meets Mouse Guard.
What a fun crossover.
The marriage of two of Pete's
plus
favorite
Ghostbusters.
Very light ghost busting. Very it's few proton
there.
Packs.
Still there.
Yeah. This is very good. I thought this was great. It's funny. The art is really nice and unique. It has that darkness. If you're a fan of Hellboy, this is a great pickup, especially since Hellboy is never quite doing the original Hellboy thing anymore. It's doing adjacent things. This, I think, will scratch that itch in a more direct way if you're a Hellboy fan. Really fun stuff.
Forget about pride. It's time for blood as we turn to the blood block.
Blood block!
Ooh, what do I want in my drink? A blood block.
Yeah. With Black Panther, Blood Hunt number one from Marvel, written by Cheryl Lynn Eaton, art by Fareed Karami, and Midnight Suns, Blood Hunt number one from Marvel, written by Brian Hill, art by Jermaine Peralta. We'll be talking about both of those books, but let's kick it off talking about the Black Panther book. Black Panther. This is not a spoiler commenter on iTunes. This has already happened.
Come on, dude. Let it go. It was hilarious.
I will never let it go.
We can't bring this guy up every 5 minutes.
My kids saw that comment loud. And they were like, Daddy, go sleep at the hotel tonight. And that's where I'm recording from right now.
Wow. That's right. So he's at the Parker hotel. Meridian in the penthouse.
That's a replica of your
that's
basement.
That's how upset he is.
You're not that famous. You're not that famous.
I mean,
what? He's not famous. He just got a 1-star review.
Like, you got to be pretty famous if someone has a hotel that's a replica of your basement.
Here's the thing. If you want to really roast us, give us a 5-star review and then roast us.
That
would really show us. Give us a 5-star review. Say how much you love the show, and that'll, wreck us.
That'll light up Alex's kids.
Black Panther is a vampire, and he goes back to Wakanda, and he talks to some panthers, and he drinks some juice from his juice pool, and then he does a bunch of other stuff. Take it away.
What's Cheryl Lynn eating? She's eating blood, because that's who the writing here is fun when it comes to Black Panther.
I agree. It is fun. First off, we need to back up the truck a little bit here. Sick cover alert. Holy shit. One of the coolest covers I've seen in a long time. This is really badass.
Because of the mouth?
Yeah, because of the vampire mouth. That's also kind of looks like a werewolf almost. All right, anyways. Panther. It's badass. That's what my point is. But yeah, Black Panther dealing with Blade and the bloodlust. I mean, this is fun times. Amazing art. This is an action-packed-ish.
When Black Panther was revealed to be a vampire in Blood Hunt number 2, I guess, I was like, oh, no. This is – I was surprised they went that way. But I think this series, this is going to be like a 3-issue series, I think, I thought is a nice way to do it. It's him – struggling with the fact that he has become a vampire, and is the Blade is sort of able to control him and has a specific mission. And it's him rejecting that mission as he's trying to help Wakanda push back the vampire menace. I think it's a great place for Black Panther to be so fraught, a character that's often ahead of the decision making going on around him, and he is definitely exactly in charge of it. He's losing here from the jump.
Yeah, it's a new position for Black Panther to be in. You know what I mean? He is kind of like second in command here. So when it comes to Blade's kind of plan that we're not sure if it's evil or helpful or what yet. But yeah, I think. So
you don't know if Blade's being evil?
Well, sure. It's he's being
evil. Seems evil.
Right, but you know,
when do you think it's going to be evil?
I like Blade,
you?
So I'm hoping maybe there's the old switch back. You know what I mean? It wasn't that bad the whole time.
I'm glad you guys like this. Midnight Suns.
Oh,
Blood
wait, wait, you, wait, wait, Alex. Hey, hold up. You What's really up? Don't like this?
There's a little too much back and forth in this issue where he's like.
Well, he's very conflicted.
He's very conflicted, but the
it's
idea
a new position
that he's like.
For him.
We set up, he's a vampire controlled by Blade, and we open up with him being like, I'm a vampire, but I'm not controlled by Blade. And I love blood, but I don't want to drink blood. And then I do drink blood. And then a couple of pages later, I'm like, I will never drink blood. And he's already drunk blood. And he starts off being like, I'm going to talk to these Panthers. And then he ends with like, I'm going to talk to these Panthers. And Shuri is like, no, I'm going to cut your throat. And he's like, nope, I've disappeared. And then he comes back. And then it just keeps going back and forth.
Sure,
and
he cut her hand so he could drink the blood out of her hand. It was a really nice moment.
There's so much business in this issue.
There's a lot going on.
I guess. I don't know.
It's not fair.
No, it is fair.
Nope.
Because I think a simpler concept of Blade
controlling. Are you gonna rewrite this?
Yeah, I would love to write this. I think I would do a much better job.
Yeah, wow. You would do a better job writing Black Panther. Wow,
no,
dude.
Initial concept of the idea of like exactly what you were saying, Justin, Black Panther is controlled by Blade and he's fighting against the control and he has to get something for Wakanda. I get that concept. I don't know what was going on in this issue.
Well, that's what we're saying is it's nice to see.
Thank you. I would love to read you two describing this issue to me instead of reading this issue. How about that?
Oh, great. We'll read back the transcript. I have a court stenographer here taking notes of everything.
No problem. Is he also doing caricatures of us?
He's doing some doodles.
I stand by my point saying that it's interesting that the thing that me and Justin loved is the thing that you hated.
I think it's interesting that we occasionally have different opinions.
Huh. Is that possible? Are we allowed to do that on a podcast? Or?
Yes, we are allowed to do it. It's just also a little tough that the thing that you loved about a comic is something that someone's like, this sucks. I want him to just make a decision and move on.
Just to be clear, I hate you personally.
Oh, great. Thank you. I'm glad we finally got some clear.
Guys, isn't that easier?
Isn't that easier?
Rather than have the back and forth, just say that from the top.
Yeah, just say that from the top.
First of all,
how do you like that?
How
do you like that? Did Alex just spoil his relationship with Pete?
Yeah, one star, Alex. You get one star.
You already Pete's gave me one star when I picked you up in that Uber, so whatever. Midnight Suns, Blood Hunt, number one. Why don't we talk about that one? In this issue, we're going to get...
Did you want to shed all over my second favorite comic, or what's up?
Take it away, Pete. I don't know. There's two Ghost Riders and a lady.
That's your review?
Sure.
First off, fun
Blaine
cover.
Cries, which seems a good indicator that he doesn't want to be doing this.
Okay, sure.
Well, yeah. And let me say, that was, I thought, the most interesting. I liked this issue more than even Black Panther for ranking them. I thought the art was a really nice, very 90s Midnight Suns, which I thought was a cool sort of light connective tissue to when I first encountered the Midnight Suns anyway. But the biggest thing that Blade is, he kills his cadre of vampire hunters employed back in the day. And then he cries. And I think that to me indicates, if we're getting into predictive territory here, that he is in the thrall of another vampire. And there's some insinuation that it might be Dracula, but I don't think so. I think we're going to find that another hero is going to be revealed as the vampire in charge of this whole thing, is my prediction.
Interesting. Yeah, but just to kind of comment a little bit on what you're saying here, this issue opens with like Blade straight up murdering his people, and it is a shocker. Then you have this really fun moment where Ghost Rider drives through a monster, and oh my God, I was like giggling, having so much fun. Yeah, and then you have the Midnight Suns kind of promising they're going to kill Blade. And, it's a fun kind of what the hell is going on kind of moment. But we don't know if it's, you know, like Zelbatron said, you know, maybe it's happy tears, because maybe he's finally being like, man, I hate working with you guys. I'm just going to murder you and just kind of get it over with.
He gets to fire his coworkers.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not what I said, but. All right.
Okay. All right. Sure.
You're saying like at the company party, like they upstaged him at karaoke, and he's like, nah,
he's
fuck
been
you
stewing.
Guys.
Yeah, he's been stewing.
He's like, what's new, pussycat? Because that's the song he sang. Yeah. Is what he said in his head, and they did a better job. Let me also say, Alex, to your point, an ongoing theme in our The Stack podcast is you never know which Ghost Rider is which. And I feel like this issue did a good job of being like, you don't know? Well, they're friends. They're staying two doors apart from each other, and they're going to say their names a lot. Danny Ketch. I'm Danny Ketch. Over there, Johnny Blaze.
Blaze.
Johnny Blaze.
Johnny Blaze.
I'm the other Ghost Rider. And I was like, okay.
When the first Ghost Rider, whichever one that was, turned into Ghost Rider, I was like, can he not turn into Ghost Rider canonically right now because the hood is Ghost Rider? And then the second Ghost Rider come in and he's like, I can't turn into Ghost Rider right now, but I do have a shotgun that can shoot Ghost Riders or whatever he's doing.
Hellfire.
Like, oh, okay. There we go.
I agree. That's the part I was like, this is the wonkiest part of the issue. I did think it was funny when the girl talking to Johnny Blaze flips him off and we get a little black bar over the middle.
Yeah, that's fun.
Good stuff. And then they jumped to another timeline, and I was like, I don't know what's happening here, but great crossover. Love these books.
Lilith.
Definitely pick them up.
Yeah.
Wow, Alex, so mad. Alex doesn't love blood hunt as much.
I don't love blood. I don't love hunting, but I do love comic books. For example,
doesn't seem like it.
Here, let me throw this out, though. Real quick, if my theory pays off, who's the vampire lord that's not Blade?
Dracula. No, it's not Dracula, because Dracula is palling around with Bloodline, the daughter of Blade.
Blade's
so it
daughter,
has to be somebody else. I don't think it's a hero, but I think we're going to get like
Jubilee as a vampire.
Not true anymore, but was true once, Pete, but probably not. Alex, hold on. Finish your sentence, because I have another theory.
I was just going to say it's some sort of like ancient vampire lord thing, like in the first Blade movie or something like that. I don't know.
Oh, you're
Steven
saying
Dorff.
You saying some motherfuckers trying to ice skate uphill? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Some motherfuckers always trying to skate uphill.
Bloodhound, that's going to rule.
Here's what it is. Here's my prediction. I'm going to go full in on this because it's something that's been seeded a couple times.
Strife?
Dr. Doom. Dr. Doom has been referenced that he's behind the Darkhold, that no one can get into Latveria because it's behind the Darkhold wall. He's the secret. He messed with the mystical arts a little too much. He stepped in a vampire trap, and now he's got Blade doing his bidding.
Let me ask you a question, though. How could a vampire bite him with his mask?
That mask doesn't go down his neck. It's rare when a mask goes down your neck. If you're wearing a neck mask, Alex, you're doing it wrong. I think the real larger concern – the turtleneck. Does Dr. Doom wear a turtleneck mask? Here's the question.
Jack Kirby.
It's less about who bit Dr. Doom. How does Dr. Doom bite when he's got that metal mouth guard in the way?
That's going to be a great scene when he's like, and he can't do it because he has the mask on.
Well, you have to lift up the mask to bite somebody. Come on, man.
But he doesn't want to show off his face because he's
He has a couple weird scars or whatever, and he can't show his face. Do you ever think Dr. Doom, when he sees all these like horribly disfigured heroes and villains, is like, hey, what am I doing with this mask? Can I just take it off at this point? Why am I so prideful of my little face?
Just relax. Take a vacay.
It's not that bad. It's fine. It's your face. Everyone's face.
Get an Airbnb.
Hey, speaking of a nice relaxing time, we should talk about Green Arrow number 12.
Sure should. From DC Comics, written by Joshua Williamson, art by Phil Hester, Sean Isaacs, and Eric Capster. In this issue, we're concluding the first year of storytelling here as the whole Arrow family goes up against Merlin, who is not the magician, but actually another archer. A lot of arrows flying here. And then as Pete teased in the second half of the issue, they have a beach party. There you go.
It was, I thought it was really fun. I thought, first off, amazing art style. Love the opening kind of island scene. Love the colors. The shading work was great. I thought this was a really Swedish, just chilling, living that island life. You know, I'm an island boy.
Don't do that.
Yeah, don't do that. It struck me that the Green Arrow origin is just Castaway if he had a bow and arrow instead of a volleyball.
Right.
Because that's what we get at the front and back end. It's him being like, I'm on the island. I'm going to just, rather than chill for a second, I'm going to just spend my whole time with the bow. And then at the end, he learns to relax a little bit and have a nice beach party with his fam.
It's nice, you know?
It was nice.
Do you really like, as always, the Green Arrow-Black Canary relationship?
Yeah.
That's great. Seeing the scenes of them together was great. I don't. This is a personal thing. I don't get the whole Arrow thing. Like, it's a lot of just shooting arrows at each other that I just...
It's sort of like a gun, but more primitive. You know? More basic.
It drives me nuts, man. You drive me fucking insane. You're like, oh, I love it when the X-Men are fucking playing baseball and hanging out. Here's a fucking an issue where the Arrow family that's normally torn through time and space are all together in one place. We can't just have a nice fucking
picnic. If the X-Men all had basketball powers, I feel like I would feel differently about that.
Well, you're Dave, who's also good with the basketball. And there's and let me say this, the Arrow family, this book, and it does a good job of creating, telling us this emotional relationships between them. I dare you, Pete, as the number one Arrow fan, to go to the splash page, page 14, and name one of those people. Name one of those people.
All right.
You don't have to do it.
You're going to the page?
You don't have to
do it. You can just say Cotter Hawk, and you'll be fine, and then you'll have met the challenge. It's okay.
Roy, maybe.
But yeah. Roy Harper or whatever. Leon, I don't know.
Sure, Roy's in there.
Yes, I think the team does a good job here. Joshua Williamson knows how to write these characters. I like how they resolve this. I like this as a comic book. But at the same time, there is a mental block with me where they're like, ultimately, they're just all shooting arrows at each other, and it's...
Well, and that feels like your personal problem, because that's no different to me than throwing batarangs around. But I do think everyone... I think a lot of comic book continuities are like, let's create a family around this main character. And because the Bat family, that works. All the Green Lanterns, the Superman family. But I got to say, the reason the Bat family works, or the fact that the Bat family works, is shocking. It's a crazy mix of continuities that when it was happening, no one ever thought they'd be like, well, let's keep track of all these Robins. Everyone was like, oh, that one died. Let's get another one in here immediately. People seem to like
that. Another one that has the same hair.
It looks the same, exactly. Yeah. It was a replacement. It wasn't like, let's keep all of these around as a family. And so, like, all these families, because I would say that, and I'm not trying to hold you, hold your feet to the fire, Pete. I would have a hard time naming a lot of the families around all these different characters now, because that's a fashionable thing to do. But it's just like, I actually, it's better when it's a little more pared down and we can focus on stuff. Like, that's why I like this, the Flash I was mentioning earlier. The continuity now is a little more cleaned up and it's focusing on specific emotionality rather than being like, look, we're all family. We all run fast. And it's like, that's confusing from a storytelling perspective. Same with these guys. We're all good with arrows. It's like, I need one arrow person, max. I don't need all of you guys. From this, I like
that's
your
a
friends.
Really good comparison, I think, with the Flash family and the Arrow family, because I say this as a Flash fan.
There are
definitely times, diehard Flash fan, where there's times where, like, yeah, I'm the Flash, but I'm the serious one, and I'm the Flash, but I'm the funny one, and I'm the Flash, but I'm the one who talks about mystical guru stuff, and I'm the Flash, but I'm impulsive, and my name is Impulse. Like, there's not enough delineation.
And I'm Max Mercury, who is also a Flash, but I don't have a name, really.
Yes. And to your point, you have to do the work here, and I think that's what Joshua Williamson has been doing with these past 12 issues.
Work. Yeah.
Is putting in the work to try to delineate these characters so they all have their own thing that is not just, I am also another person that shoots arrows. As a comic book reader, I'm not quite there yet, but I appreciate the effort that he has put in over these 12 issues to try to make this work.
Agreed. But I also think we can just let some characters not have to all be hanging around as much. We can just move into other stuff is what I'm just saying in general.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing that has worked about this is he has kept it focused on Ollie, who is the main original guy. Main Arrow guy and how his family rotates around him. But I agree. Going into issue 13, I want to be like, great, got my family back together. Get the fuck out of your family. Yeah. It's all
go
about
back to your home. It's like the end of Thanksgiving. Go home. I've got to go back to my life. And this has been Justin and Alex's Arrow Corner, something we always have time for.
Creature from the Black Lagoon.
You know Pete's in a good mood when he is.
Well, it's just bullshit, man. You know, like you're... Whatever, you just don't like people with arrows, so you're going to hate this. It makes sense.
No, I think that was a nice discussion.
I think so, too. We can, and I can, ultimately, I can go to an archery range if I really want to experience this.
What a creature. You're trying to move on, but then you're fucking throwing arrows at me. Fuck you, man.
How ironic.
Like, yeah, whatever. Your whole fucking stupid family just runs fast. That's all they are.
This is a fight that you're both losing immediately. You're both losing this.
I know.
That's a problem.
Like, I know.
My guy shoots arrows. Your guys run fast. Who's better? Neither of you.
Neither of us. Was great.
Justin,
my comic was dumb, so whatever.
No,
dude.
I like both of these comics.
Not like both of these comics.
All these comics are good.
There's not a comic in the stack that I didn't like, and I dare anybody to listen back and find if there is one comic that I didn't like.
Well, there's definitely one. Mine is the Galactus family, because they all are so fucking hungry. They're eating all these planets.
Creature from the Black Lagoons lives, number 2 from Image Comics and Skybound, written by Dan Waters and Rom V, art by Matthew Roberts. In this issue, our main character, an investigative journalist, is recovering from her almost drowning in the last issue. And in this issue, we're finding out a lot of science about what happens to you when you drown, as she continues to track down a serial killer and the creature at the same time.
Yeah, I love this. This is great art. I like anytime the kind of like monster is the good guy, I'm on board. I'm a sucker for that. And I'm excited to see what's to come.
I like this too. The lips of the creature in the Black Lagoon are very full and red.
Well, you got probably full lips? Filler?
It looks very full.
You got filler.
Yeah.
Don't
beautiful, like red lipstick on these lips.
Don't shame the creature.
Yeah,
from the
don't
black
fish. Region. Don't shame fish lips, man. You know what I mean?
Fish lips sink ships. I always say, and these lips are sinking those ships. It's such an interesting, different way into this. Like, we're following so much of her not knowing if the creature's real or not, and it calls into question what's happening for me. So I'm curious. The last little, real. I know, but the last little bit where the creature's like on the land, and I would say even above the land, I was like, is that creature climbing that tree?
I really like the fact that Dan Waters and Ron V are clearly, I don't know, researching water and the effects of water. The first issue was very much about water and drowning. This issue is about the after effects of drowning. This is nothing against James Todd IV and Martin Simmons, who did the Dracula series, because they're phenomenal. But that one, which was very straightforward adaptation of Dracula, I appreciate that this is like, think about the creature of the Black Rune. What is a theme of that? What is something we could explore in a different way each issue? And they're spooling that
the
out.
The lagoon.
Yes.
They're really exploring the lagoon part.
First issue, Brooke Shields. Second issue, the other guy. Right? That's what you were saying, Pete?
That's it.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Anyway, really good comic, good art. Helverine,
great.
Number one from Marvel, written by Benjamin Percy, art by Julius Ota. I was very tempted to put this in a block with Midnight Suns and also Wolverine number 50, which we're going to talk about in a bit, just because they're all kind of the same thing. But here, this is picking up on Wolverine Ghost Rider crossover that found Wolverine turn into a Ghost Rider. We get another Wolverine Ghost Rider here, as well as a bunch of other things going on in the world.
Helverine,
yes, as a bunch of characters are resurrected and tear through, not the Weapon X facility, but basically that. So
the pentagram, I believe it's called, sure. Which is really funny. Shouts to that. Good wordplay there. I always rank every comic we do on the stack on the Pete scale of enjoyment. William of Marbury was the number one on the Pete enjoyment factor. This has got to be way at the other end, because this issue starts with Mephisto and ends with Dokken, formerly Dokken, now known as Akira. Akihiro, which is a character I love. I thought that was a great reveal.
Spoilers, Dokken in some sort of Frankencastle situation.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about the positive. So first off, cool cover. You got this kind of Ghost Rider, Paul Wolverine thing happening over here. Goddamn, that's a fun cover. But then inside, you get this double panel spread where it's like Wolverine flaming skull as he walks through a church. Just, oh my God. That should be like a t-shirt or a tattoo. That's unbelievable. Just really.
Could be both, Pete. Make the choice.
Yeah, you know what you should do is you should get a tattoo and then also get the t-shirt and like take off your t-shirt, and then what was on the t-shirt is on your body.
Yeah, thanks for explaining that.
I can't take this t-shirt off. It's my skin.
Yeah, I wasn't sure how t-shirts work, so thanks.
Ooh, you should get a t-shirt that says, I can't take this t-shirt off. It's my skin.
That's a good idea. Maybe that could be on the back. Yeah. Maybe that could be a sweatshirt, and then you take that off, and then it's got the other stuff underneath.
Yeah, so then you got the reveal, which, you know, sucks because you don't want to boo a reveal, but that's what happens here, where you're like, oh, cool, it's Wolverine. And then you're like, wait, it's not. It's fucking Dokken. So I was trying to play with
this. Akihiro is his current name. I think Dokken is.
I'm not going to call him that.
Cool word.
So, you know, instead of playing with this Helverine, it shouldn't be Helverine because it's not Wolverine. It should be the Hell because, like, what the hell are they doing? You know what I mean? Part Dokken and part Hellion should be the Hell, number one.
What the hell are you doing?
Yeah. Wow.
Good stuff. Benjamin Percy just goes so hard. I feel like when he gets his hands on something that he's like, oh, I'm going to do a Helverine book. Okay, we're going to do resurrected hell soldiers from the pentagram coming up, lying to Wolverine. He's the sucker here. Benjamin Percy puts Wolverine through the paces. And this is another example of Wolverine being like, sorry, what? What do I have to do?
Almost like Percy hates Wolverine.
No, yeah, but it's fantastic. He's cracked the formula that the best Wolverine stories are when he has to do the worst possible things, as we're going to talk about in a couple minutes,
I also think it is funny that they're throwing out this series that feels like, oh, if you liked Wolverine in this crossover, here you go, versus it's actually an essential part of continuity that spins off of X-Force and Wolverine and all of these other titles. And that's wild. That's all.
Yeah. This is definitely in continuity.
Yeah. The Penguin, number 10 from DC Comics, written by Tom King, art by Rafael De La Torre. And in this issue, the Penguin continues his assault on his children who have taken over
the world
of Gotham, with Batman caught in the middle. I love the way they treat Batman in particular.
Come on, man.
He's being played as a sucker.
Yeah, he's just there to light people's cigarettes. This is fucking...
It's such a power play. Like, yeah, it is. Well written.
It sucks to see him falling for it so much.
But those pages where Tom King plays it out, like, I know he's knocking Batman down a peg, but getting Batman to a place where he's like, oh, God damn it, I'll just give Penguin a light, but it's clearly Penguin doing a power play on Batman, I thought was so smartly done.
Yeah, of course, it's smart now, but when Black Panther starts with something that ends with something you call it stupid, but when this does it, you're like, oh, it's so smart. Okay, I see how it is. I see how it is, man.
Yes.
Save your grievances for our grievance podcast, which we will never release.
Okay, great. I do think that, like, first off, the cover is fantastic, where you got his kind of monocle and you can see Gotham in it. Really badass and very cool.
Pete loves monocles, guys.
Penguin has a fucked up family, and you know, it's really messed up, but man, it's crazy to see kind of Batman kind of having to be this like horrible assistant to Penguin's family. It's a tough place to see him.
And Justin, you have two kids. Which one would you beat to teach the other a lesson?
Yeah, that's a great question.
It's something that comes up at our PTA meetings a lot. And yeah, I have my power rankings. I'll share them at the end. Okay. What I like about what you were saying, Alex, and what you were disappointed in, Pete, is this is a Penguin book. It's about Penguin, about his kids. So, like, it makes sense that Batman is a little bit of not at the top of his game. And what I like about the way that the story unfolds is Batman's, like, doing a million things. In the same way when, like, our focus is split, we don't do a great job at all of them. And it's like Batman being like, oh, I got to go to the Iceberg Lounge. And he's on, like, a jet ski in the sewers of Gotham. And then he's on a train. And he's on a snowmobile. I'm like, yeah, of course he hasn't cracked this case. He's driving too many things. He's too, and I think that's such a breath of fresh air on Batman, someone who in so many recent Batman stories is so on top of everything. I like seeing him only knowing to beat up and chase people and not being able to be like, I had a deal with Penguin and he seems a little weird about it, but I can't quite tell what he's up to.
Good stuff. World Tree, number 10 from Image Comics, written by James Tynion IV, art by Fernando Blanco. We're getting a big explanatory issue as we jump back in time and find out how Gabriel Winters built a fight against the Undernet. Meanwhile, our Naked Lady is making some big new moves as well in the police station. What'd you guys think about this one?
Evil Naked Lady, you know. Yeah, I think this
is distinction.
I've never met a naked lady that's evil. Oh,
what? All right. Well, I guess congrats to you.
And Pete, you exclusively know naked women who are evil.
Yeah, I'm not going to even go anywhere near that. First off, the amazing That's art. What they love all. Yeah. Love the art. Yeah, you got this kind of crazy evil bone monster dog. Is actually a person. That's a fun reveal. And then, yeah, the dude with the gun is close, getting close to the proximity of the evil naked lady. That's where we kind of leave the issue. So I think this, I love the art and the edgy futuristic kind of feel that it gives you, this kind of like tense, like, oh shit, what's going to happen? They do a great job of kind of riding that out and playing with our emotions in interesting ways. This comic is very creative and out there, and I think it's impressive.
I just want to say for the record, I always say spoiler warning before I talk about the end of an issue. Oh, Pete just throws it out there in the middle of this review. So I don't know why I took the heat.
I love that you're actually angling for a second one-star review about Pete.
Yeah.
So you're not trying to push back. You're just like, let's just equalize this.
This comic is one star. Let's get 2 1-star reviews.
This comic is very good. I agree. And I mean, James Tynion, he just always knows the story that he wants to tell. And it's sort of twofold now. I think he's hit a groove where he's like giving us backstory on each of the characters so that he can set them up for the next big reveals that we're going to get going forward. But he's still keeping the scary stuff boiling underneath, as we get in this issue when Skeleton Boy gets wrecked.
Yeah. Poor Skeleton Boy, right?
Mm-hmm. Poor Skeleton Boy. Avengers Twilight number 6 from Marvel, written by Chip Zdarsky, art by Daniel Acuna. In this final issue, our post-APOC, right, Pete?
Hey!
Avengers are fighting against the Red Skull and other folks. We get some big reveals and surprises throughout this issue that, of course, I won't spoil. But how did you guys think this tied up?
Well, first off, epic looking cover, just amazing inking and panel work. I love how some of the panels just kind of like bleed backwards. Just really artistic thinking going on, and like the thinner, kind of taller panels that have like this kind of rhythm and feel to it. Super tight bananas art. I was having such a great time with this. Right up until, and again, I don't want to spoil like I did with the last book, apologies. Thor does something that was rough.
Why? You didn't like that?
No.
You didn't think he deserved
it? No, I didn't. I didn't like that. I don't like it when one of my favorite characters, maybe something, you know what I mean? So don't like that.
I will say, I will give you a spoiler warning on this, because I do want to say, because it leads to a great moment in a couple pages later. Thor does kill the Hulk by drowning him, dropping the hammer literally on him.
Yeah.
Which I thought was cool.
The exact opposite. I think that is not cool. Not cool.
Nice. Two different takes, but it sets up a great panel where another character who dies in the issue is in Valhalla with Bruce Banner, who seems very uncomfortable with the fact that he has to drink with a bunch of Norse warriors for the rest of time.
Would you like that?
Hell yeah.
Yeah?
To go to Valhalla?
Yeah.
Party until you fight? That's what I dream of doing every day.
Pete?
Yeah, definitely. Yes, please.
Mead? You ever had mead, though? Mead tastes like shit.
Yeah, that seems like
hell
to me.
I'm sure you get used to it, though.
I don't know.
It gets you fucked up.
It's super sweet. It's like drinking maple syrup with like 2% of booze inside.
Oh, my God. That sounds glorious.
Yeah, you're going to crush it in Valhalla. But you have to die a warrior, Pete, so let's see. Yeah.
We'll see what happens. The six figure...
I just think that... you know what I mean? Like, I understand what the point they were going for, and I was trying not to spoil this, but like, you know, someone who is a giant rage monster, it sucks that they're like, well, we just had to put him down because he's a rage monster and you can't deal with that, can you? Well, you know, there's other options we could have tried, and we didn't get into all the things that maybe they did try or whatever, but it just seemed like it was like Thor was like, yep, yeah, he was struggling, so I put him out of his misery, which, okay, all right, you know, that's a real thing. But it just sucks that, you know, like, it would have been nice if he could have gone, shrunk him down. You know what I mean? There was this amazing story about Tiny Hulk falling in love and screaming at the heart of the atom, which was the name of the book. But, like, oh, man, you know, there's other things you can do instead of just giving up on your friend.
Pete, let that be a warning, because we're in the same boat with you. Got a rage monster out of control. We're going to end up, it won't be a Mjolnir in the ocean. It'll be like a sledgehammer in the bathtub for you.
Well, now I know what to look out for. I'll never get anywhere in the bathtub.
You'll never see it coming. You'll never see it coming.
Oh, well, you just told me what you're going to do. So, yes, I do.
It could be a kiddie pool.
All right. Whatever it is, we got to never go near water again. And you'll be like, oh, my God, it's misery. You're doing a misery thing to me.
No, I'm going to do it, Alex. I think I've been pretty clear about
but
that.
But you're going to be dressed as Kathy Bates.
Yeah, Kathy
right?
Bates with oh, a Mjolnir. I'm going to write Mjolnir on the sledgehammer.
I'm Kathy Bates with a Mjolnir. Time to die.
People well, be like, anyway, what? Oh.
What are we talking about? The six fingers.
The six fingers.
Number four from Image Comics, written by Dan Waters. Art by Sumit Kumar. In this issue, our main character has finally accepted the fact that he's a serial killer and is going to do one more killing. And honestly, I think that's nice, like understanding who you are and going forward with it. I appreciate that. You know, like, I appreciate
even when it's killing?
Yeah, man. Like, oh, yeah, finally, it's okay. Finally knowing what you're supposed to do, that's pretty cool.
So just for the record, so people yeah, no one can use this later against you in the court, you're saying it's okay.
I like killing children. What were you going to say, Pete?
Oh, wow. Okay. Great. Never. No wow. Further wow. Questions. No further yeah. Questions.
Okay.
Wow, all Pete right. Finally yeah. Broke you. He's been working this case for 18 years.
Yeah. Did you get it? Okay. Red team, go. Red team, go. It's an all clear.
Oh, sorry, Pete. Red team gave up 17 yeah. Years ago.
When I become really famous in 10 years, and somebody finds this podcast, I'm years. Not joking.
Wait, you said it's going to be 10 years?
10 years? 10 years. What's the thing that's really going to change? Over? Yeah, in 10 yeah. Years, what's going to...
I don't know.
Comics are finally back.
I'm yeah. Trip over a slug on... Blork Black or whatever.
Wow, in 10 wow. Years you're living on Blork Black?
Yeah, Blork Black.
Wow.
No, not really... a planet. It's a platform. It's like TikTok. I was just.
Oh, okay. My bad. No,
there's going to be a video of me and people are like, that guy's really funny how he tripped over that slug and then listened to all of his podcasts.
The Galactus family has come to eat Blork Black. What are we going to do?
And that's our review of the Six Figures number four.
No, it's not.
Oh,
no.
It's not.
Okay. No. Another great cover. This is another great
really
issue.
Cover focused, Pete.
Well, you got to talk about them. They're important. Yeah.
I don't know. Does anybody draw them, honestly?
I hope so. I hope that's not all machines.
Yeah. When I go into the comic book shop, I rip off the cover because I'm like, this is not part of the story.
Wow. Yeah.
Not interested.
And then I kill a child.
I hope somebody kills you. I think this is another great issue. We get some good forward movement here. Things are happening. We're getting more information, which is great. But I love that we're building. And each issue is very enjoyable. And I can't wait for the next one. I'm having a blast with this series.
Man, that six fingers is so tiny. Right, guys?
It's growing, though. It's bigger, this issue.
Shouts. This comic, I really like this. It's also wild that this is the story with the drones and the control and all of that stuff.
Yeah. That's also in this comic.
Yeah. It's also in there. It's very good. I'm curious. The next issue is the last issue.
What? Oh, no. It is. I want more.
Really curious to see how this wraps up and whether... Yeah. The one hand, the six fingers work as their own series because they've tied closer and closer together as they've gone. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. We'll see what happens. Wahhabis.
Wolverine, number 50 for Marvel, written by Benjamin Percy and Victor Laval and Larry Hama. Art by Jeffrey Shaw, Corey Smith, Daniel Picciotto, and Javi Fernandez. This is the final issue of the Sabretooth War storyline. We're also getting some backup stories as well. Pete, why don't you take this one away?
Yeah, so Wolverine, number 50, celebrating 50 years. You see what they did there? That was nice. But yeah, this is amazing collection of stories here. We're kind of wrapping up this Sabretooth v. Wolverine that happens every year around Wolverine's birthday because they're friends. They're just best enemies. You know, but yeah, I really love Shocker. I really love the Larry Hama story. Yeah, I just felt like this is fantastic art and a lot of fun and love was put into this celebrating old short stack himself, Wolverine.
Pete has always been a Hama mama, and there's no way.
Hama mama, to baby. Fight. Come on.
I really like this Sabretooth War. It was a surprising event. I was like, how is this going to be a 10-issue event? And I thought it really worked out well. The way that Wolverine got it together at the end I thought was cool, really shredded him. This is the panel I was talking about in the final short that is sort of a Wolverine retrospective. There's a panel of him, Jean, and Cyclops on the moon sitting at a table together. Pain leaves a residue, but so does love, because they be fucking on the moon. Shouts.
That is not, you're really
that's
stretching
in the dialogue.
That's not in the dialogue, bro.
But it does say, but so does love, and it features the three of them in the panel.
Mm-hmm. And sure, then it says they be fucking on the moon.
But it doesn't say that last part there is my point.
You got to read the red band version.
Yeah, I wrote it in Sharpie on my iPad. That's permanent.
Good stuff. This was a great crossover. Good art throughout as well. Last but not least, The Bloody Dozen, A Tale of the Shrouded College, number 6, from Image Comics, written by Charles Soule. Art by Alberto Jimenez Albuquerque. In this final issue, vampires near the sun. Some of our main hero characters have been turned into vampires, and some vampire stuff happens.
Don't spoil it, man. Jesus.
Blood hunt has begun.
Yeah, blood hunt. First off, I love the art style. It gives a real lightness to all the kind of blood and violence, which is nice. Some real twists and turns here. But yeah, kind of the one of my favorite characters. It's tough what happens.
It's interesting. The Shrouded College books start in a place and go in a lot of different places. And this one is no different. It starts as like sort of a family adventure, dysfunctional family, and then really goes full tilt into vampire stuff. And then it ends in a different place. And there's some
different
great back
family.
Matter. Different family. That's a spoiler. Where Charles talks about sort of a little bit of that process about how he really feels like he's letting these stories guide him as a storyteller, and that's always nice to hear because it means that we're not going to end up in a standard place. And he teases his next book in the Shrouded College group, which is called Cold Witch.
Yeah, it's
Cold
just a
Cold Witch.
It's just scary because nothing is safe. It seems like in these stores, so
right.
An extra
except
edge
for the
to
Cold
it.
Witch.
There's nothing like a cold witch. You know what I mean? Because sometimes a hot witch is too much. You got to have a nice
cold witch. I prefer a hot witch.
Really?
Yeah, when I order, I get a hot witch.
Even on a warm day, you're still going to get a hot witch?
Honestly, that's the only way I could wake up.
Dude, after a long day, there's nothing better than a cold witch, man.
Coming from a guy who I watched order a hot meatball sub every Tuesday before at 6:40 p.m. before we did an hour of comic book club. It's the hottest day this summer. Pete's getting
this?
A hot
what
meatball.
What is this thumb right here? Are you
just
like
thumbs
playing
up, dude,
my
I did
meatball
that.
Sub game?
All I
it certainly is a sub game, the game that Pete was playing.
It was Seb Game, and he's the Dom. If you'd like to support this podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m.
Sure do.
Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comic books. Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter/X. Comic Book Club Live on TikTok and Instagram, comicbookclublive.com. For this podcast and many more, until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Pete, your bath is ready. Let me know when you want to pop in.
Oh, no!
Drawn.